All right, this is February 23rd, and this is Questions and Answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Carol, would you turn and say to the lady beside you there, I am. I, and I alone, am responsible for my thinking.
I, and I alone, am responsible for my thinking. I, and I alone, are responsible for my thinking.
I, and I alone, am responsible for my thinking.
I, and I alone, am responsible for my thinking.
I, and I alone, am responsible for my thinking.
I, and I alone,
I and I alone am responsible for my own thinking.
Why is that so important? You have to, in this teaching, come to the conclusion that you can think the thought that you want to think. No one else is doing that for you. Nothing outside is doing that for you. There's no one living in your mind but you. Now, you may think that it's your mind doing that. You may think that it's your parents. You may think that it's the society or what we call race mind. But it's not. You are responsible for what you are thinking. If you don't like what you're thinking, you change it. Which I've told you that I don't know how many times. But we have to keep remembering that. That you are responsible for your thinking. Nothing else is doing that but you. So what do you want to think? So start to think prosperous thoughts. Start to think bigger thoughts about yourself. You have to do that. We're always making ourselves. We're always creating ourselves. And we do that with each thought. And if you don't like your thought, you change it. If you don't like what you did a moment ago, don't do it in the next moment. That's all that means. Learning to control your thinking. So, along with that, I would like to say, I'm going to have a retraction here, you know. I'm not infallible like the Pope. And every once in a while, I give you information that is not correct. And a couple weeks ago, or maybe a month or so ago, I said Saul's wife turned to salt. And it's Lot's wife that turned to salt. Just in case somebody's listening to this, or in case you're out there, and you tell somebody, give them the wrong information. I do not like that. I'm not here to give you the wrong information. I'm here to give you the right information. But from time to time, I get confused. There's a lot going on in my memory banks, and sometimes they short circuit and I come up with the wrong name. Also, last week I quoted, and I think I got that quote right, and I found it again. And it is, every man takes the limits of his own vision for the limits of the world. And that was Schopenhauer. And I remember I told you that was Schopenhauer, but I don't know if I got that one exactly right. Every man takes the limits of his own vision for the limits of the world. Very important to realize that you're doing that to yourself. Anything that's happening to you, you're doing. Don't ever think that something else or somebody else is doing it to you. Nothing is happening to you. You are the happening. You always are. And on the back of that card is, we live our lives based on what we believe about our world, ourselves, our capabilities, and our limits. So you have to change what you believe about your world, yourself, your capabilities, and your limits. If you think you're not capable of doing something, then you're not capable of doing it. You're the one who makes those choices, nobody else. And you hear story after story about teachers and other people who said, oh, you can't do that. And the person turned right around and did it. You have wonderful stories here in this industry. Remember, they told Clint Eastwood to get off the lot. You'll never be an actor. Now he's a Hollywood icon, known the world over. You see, so you can never pay attention to other people. Remember, Eleanor Roosevelt said, no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. You're always giving somebody the consent to do that. People treat you the way you treat yourself. Remember that. People will always treat you the way you treat yourself. So learn to treat yourself correctly. Learn to see yourself as the magnificent beings that you really are. Learn to see yourself as the miracles that you really are. Learn to appreciate this wonderful body that you're living in. And think of all the wonderful things it does for you. And give it thanks. And be proud to be a human being. Be proud to be here. But know that you are magnificent. You have to know these things about yourself. You see, we see so many bad things going on that we get the idea that humans are this, that, and the other thing. Humans are magnificent. And if you give any human a chance, that human will become magnificent. But if you keep beating them down, they stay beaten down, and you beat yourself down at the same time. So remember that. Everyone is doing the very best they know how to do. And everyone is magnificent because everyone is God. There can be no other way than that. If you believe that God is everywhere and that God is the only thing that there is, then you have to be some part of that. And do you think that God is less than magnificent? I don't think so. You have in your mind an idea of some wonderful thing called God. Well, you're part of that wonderful thing called God, so you must be wonderful also. So do that for yourself and listen to what your mind is saying and know that when it's talking to you, you're the one that's allowing it to talk. You can tell it to talk the way you want. You're saying you have to do that. You have to change your mind about things and about what you think about yourself. Now, we were doing... before a little mind, seeing what the mind does and so forth, and if we do grow and we don't grow or whatever we're doing, and I'm always telling you little stories on myself. As you can see tonight, I spilled my food on me. Well, I very seldom spill food on myself. Now, years ago, I would have been absolutely demoralized by this, and I had never shown up in a group of people with a spot on me. Never shown up, you see. When I was a child, my mother would dress my brother and I in white, down to those little white sandals that had the little holes in them, pure white, and put us outside and say, now go play, but don't get dirty. And we would come back in the house spotless. You see. But that's, now I've broken that. This doesn't bother me at all. You see, these are the little things that you have to do for yourself. You see, you have to say, well, that's ridiculous. I'm changing that idea about myself. It wasn't my idea to begin with. And then you change it. You correct it. You don't live with it the rest of your life. And how many people have that excuse? Well, that's what my mother always said, or that's how my mother always did it. Or my mother taught me that. Well, if she taught you something that's useful, then use it. But if it's something that's not helping you now or is causing any stress in you, get rid of it, for goodness sakes. Get rid of it. You're the one who has to do that. Okay? What else before we go? Oh, the little handouts. I just love this. I found this in a little shop. You'll love the name of it. It's called Potted. And it's a garden shop. And here was this book. And as it says, you have your little handouts. I only made a few sheets for you. Pull your weeds, plant your seeds. Tend to the garden of your mind. Now, the back. Think of your mind as a garden where every thought plants a seed. Are you planting flowers or weeds in your garden? Pull your weeds, plant your seeds. Journal is a gardening tool to tend to the garden of your mind. Its purpose is to inspire and encourage you to rid yourself of any negative weeds planted in your inner garden and to begin planting positive seeds. In this way, you slowly yet effectively start to reprogram self-defeating thought patterns. This process can help you create a wonderful new life for yourself. Your mind is a garden. Your thoughts are the seeds. The harvest can either be flowers or weeds. Wadsworth, William Wadsworth said that. Anyway, I thought this was absolutely wonderful. And if you want this, want one of these books, all the information are on this because I printed the back of this also. So then it goes on here to tell you, and you can read that on your own, how to pull and do. And the other one here, the first page here, is your intention. Your intention with this journal may change as you change, but it's always a good idea to set an intention when starting anything in life. An intention. An intention is the same as an expectation. It's the same as an expectation. What do you expect to happen? This is what I intend to happen. This is what I intend to do. This is what I expect. Always start out with that. Look at the bottom here. It says, start your day. The start of your day is a great time to set an intention. Affirm, today is a new day and I am a new me. Think of that. Every day you're a new person. You're a new person. So start your life over each day. You know, there used to be a song, I think, in the 70s. What's the name of that song? Today is the first day of the rest of your life. Today is the first day of the rest of your life. So think of those. Think of that, okay? Now, Bill mentioned something here, and I wanted to bring that up again. He's thanking me for sharing different experiences and so forth with you, and then he went on to say, and then we put them in perspective and use them the way we want to. And I've told you that 100 times, and I'll tell it again tonight. Take this teaching and do anything you want with it. Take anything that I say and do anything you want with it. But never say that Dallas said this. When you're telling somebody, you take full credit for that. You change it the way you want it and you use it. Because you have to know what you're saying. I was in a class when I was in fourth year of ministerial school. The third year group, I was doing a round table with them. And every one of them, when I would ask them a question, they would say, Kennedy said. Kennedy says this. Kennedy says that. I said, I'm not interested in what he said. I could care less what Kennedy said. What are you saying? Take what you learn from here. Change it. Any way you want to change it that makes sense to you so that you can use it. And claim it as yours. Because you cannot live through me. You say, you have to live through yourself. You see, I cannot think for you. You have to think for yourself. So you take what I say and you change it so that it becomes yours. And then you tell that story as your story. You see, that is the way this travels around. My ego does not need to know what I said. You see, and I do not need credit for that. I'm not one of these people that have everything copyrighted and all that. So use this, anything that I have, you're more than welcome to it. You're more than welcome. But take credit for it. Don't say, oh, well, Dallas said this in class. Somebody asks you something, say, here's what I think. And if you want to repeat exactly what I said, please feel free to do that. But don't add, this is what Dallas said. They didn't ask you what I said. They asked you what you were doing. So you see the difference there? Okay. What else do we need today? What else do I have here? Oh, I have one card. You create what you see by the beliefs you hold about what you are looking at. You see, because we're always seeing with the mind. So now before we open this to questions and answers, does anyone remember what the most important thing that we have to remember?
That we're worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and we matter. And
There's one more, right?
I'm only asking for one. The most the most important, that's four. When I go like this, that's four.
This is wonderful.
You're wonderful. The most important thing to remember is we live in a mental world. That has to be in the forefront of your mind. You live in a mental world. You have to remember that. Remember, the world is convincing, and it will seduce you every time, and it will convince you that you do not live in a mental world, that you live in a material world. Once you realize that you live in a mental world, you can change your world. You cannot change the material, but you can change the mental. When you change the mental, the material changes. But since we're not taught that, and since the mind, your mind, does not want you to know that, so it keeps it underneath. So when I ask that question, it's hard to, for some people were in this class. Do you remember how long it took Nathan to respond to imagination? He could not remember. The most important tool that you have is your imagination. Now, talking about the imagination, this is why this little book works. If you can think of your mind as a garden, and in fact, I remember doing a meditation with everyone about a garden, and you were pulling out the weeds in your garden, pulling out the negatives, you see. So you use your imagination. This sounds very silly, and you see this little girl, and you think, oh, yeah, great idea. Using your imagination is the only way you're going to change. And if you can reduce your mind down to a garden and you realize the negative thoughts are the weeds and the positive thoughts are the flowers, you can tend to your own mind, to your own garden. That's using your imagination. It's very simple, very easy, this teaching. It's that whole idea of children becoming childlike. Not childish, childlike, where you can use your imagination. But we get become what we think are grown-ups, and we start to use the intellect, and we say, oh no, my goodness, that brain, well, we know it's, oh my goodness, neurons and this going on and that going on and neurosurgery and oh my goodness, and the brain is da-da-da-da-dee-da-da. Does anyone understand any of that? And the little synapses are going off, and this is sparking over here, and that's sparking over there, and this, da, 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 da. You go, oh, forget it. Now, if you think of your mind as a garden, you can grasp that right away. You can grasp, always reduce something down to its simplest form. To its simplest form. Albert Einstein was working on a unified theory so that all the different elements would come together. And all the what are they called? I'll call them powers right now. The gravity, electromagnetism, and the weak force and the strong force. That there would be a unified equation, a unified theory that would explain the whole universe. And he said, when we discover it, we'll find that it's very simple. The reason we haven't discovered it is because we always want to make things complicated so that we feel superior. So that we say, ah, look, my intellect, I'm smarter than the average bear. You see? Reduce things down. Reduce things down. It's that whole idea. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. One bite at a time. See? Become like children and see this. And use this. And all the information is there. And I gave you enough start if you want to do it. Absolutely fine. But remember, it's your imagination. And when you can reduce something to a simple form where you can actually understand it, the mind can understand that, you can change again. Okay? All right. I think that's all I had to say tonight. So, questions?
Can you Can you further define mental world?
Yes. All right, mental world. In fact, next month we're doing mind is all there is. You see, there's nothing but mind. A mental world means that nothing comes into existence in material before it's first a thought. So it's always going to boil down to what are you thinking? You see, somebody had to think of that table before it was made. You see, but we see the table and we say, oh, well, look, it's a physical world we live in. It's a material world we live in. But it isn't. It's a mental world. We always have to start. Everything starts with an idea. Everything starts with a thought. You say, you can't get out of that chair before you start to think you're going to get out of it.
So it's a matter of choosing your thoughts in order to make the mental work for you.
Yes. Yes. Always. It's always choosing your thoughts. And that's the freedom you have. You see, you can choose to think anything. But we like to think everything. If 100 people think something, then we think, well, that's all right, then I'll think that too. Those 100 people could be wrong, you see. And that's how we get into all this trouble, because we just consign ourselves over to somebody else's thinking, you see. As soon as I get in a group like that, or somebody tells me something, I start to think completely differently. And I think, well, if I'm the only one thinking this, that's all well and good. Because there's power in the majority of one. You see. So, learn to think for yourself. You can think any thought you want. It's perfectly okay to think any thought you want. You do not have to think like anybody else. You know, you don't have to do that. That's what's wrong with our educational system. They try to make everyone think the same. It's a great idea, and it certainly educates people. But it keeps people also thinking the same thing. Does that help you?
If the science is wrong, you believe that we create what happens to us.
Yes.
How did the Jews create the Holocaust, and how did the blacks create slavery?
Ah. A very good question. With the Jewish people, I'll start there. For centuries, they were downtrodden. They were thrown out of country after country. So, the group consciousness had to be, there's something wrong with us somewhere. You're saying. So when the Nazis came into power and said, yes, there is something wrong with you, they accepted that. You see, they didn't fight back. They believed that. Now, with the slavery issue, that one I cannot address as succinctly as the other one, because the blacks were in Africa were selling blacks to the white people. The blacks were selling themselves off.
Not all.
Not all of them, no. But they were selling themselves off. How that got started, I don't know.
Well, the original slavery started with the Arabs.
Yes. And it's still, I think it's still there today,
yes.
The slavery. You know.
But
slavery.
There were a few African tribes that were selling.
Yes, we're selling off.
Yeah, but that was
right.
Not what
created. No. I don't know what created slavery. No. There has to be some kind of consciousness. There has to be a mental equivalent for that. I don't know what it is. Yeah. Right. Well, just be glad that it's not there anymore. You know. Sometimes you can search and you'll never find the answer to that. You know. Just be grateful that it's no longer there, that we've advanced past that, thank goodness. Does that help you?
Yeah, well, that just, I was just thinking one night, and it just came into my mind.
Yes.
And I just wondered how this all came about, if we create
right.
What happens to
yes.
We create all the experiences.
Right. I'll tell you a cute story, and maybe this will help, maybe it won't. Is anyone here old enough to remember Peggy Bassett? Peggy Bassett was a religious science minister in Huntington Beach. She had a large congregation, thousands. She told this story. There was a man in her church that had tattoos up and down his arms. And somebody said, "How could anyone do that to themselves?" And she said, "It was in the mind before it was on the body." You see, what that's the mental equivalent. It was in his mind. He wanted tattoos. You had to think. Tattoos just don't appear. You have to start thinking, you see. So somebody was thinking something, is what I'm trying to say here. You know, it was in somebody's mind, and then it took off. The same way that horrible thing, that Holocaust and so forth, one person or a group of people to be able to mesmerize a whole nation. It's incredible. And I think a whole generation of people, with the slavery issue, it became big business. And it became normal. People thought it was, oh, this is the way it should be done. And, here again, look at the Christian ministers who absolutely told the black people, that is your job. You're to serve the white people. That's not in the Bible anywhere. Not in the Bible anywhere.
Well, my other question, I don't need to take all the time, but the other part of that question is, if in science's mind we believe that God is within each and every one of us, and this life on earth is heaven or hell, we choose which, how could the slaves accept science's mind if they had been?
Well, they probably would have accepted science of mind because they accepted Christianity. And Christianity kept them down, and they were at the beginning in all the churches. They had to be on the balconies. They were not allowed down with the other people. They could come to church, but they had to be separated. So if they could accept that, and they did accept the suffering and so forth, is how they got hooked on Christianity. Because as soon as they discovered that Christ suffered, they said, "Oh, we can relate to that."
And
And the afterlife, yes.
Because if it's so miserable here on earth, yes, that's something to look,
yes,
forward to.
Right.
But with science of mind, all of that,
yes,
is taken away.
Yes, it is.
They would have to deal with what?
They'd have to deal with what is in front of them.
And their lives were miserable. Yes. So how could they have accepted science of mind?
Well, I think they would have. They would have seen that their minds are creating something. See, they had to get in. You can't. They had to get into a mindset that they were slaves. You see, they had to get into that mindset. Oh, I'm a slave, and my children are going to be slaves, and it is misery and all. And they generation after generation, it's like any other culture. It becomes, let's do it, you know. And they just keep doing it. I often think of this one. I mean, how stupid people. Look at the Chinese who crushed all these women's feet all the time. They couldn't even walk, you know. They had to walk, but that was acceptable. You know, we accept things so easily sometimes. You know, but we're growing in consciousness. What is the main thing we're always trying to grow in? Compassion. Compassion is what we're trying to grow in. We must learn to have compassion for everything, for everybody and everything. That means you don't go around kicking animals, and you don't go around breaking limbs off of trees and so forth. You have to have respect for all of life. You have to realize that that tree is God also. That's God acting as a tree. The same way this is Dallas. God acting as Dallas. Help you? I know it's a hard one. Yes.
I'm fairly new to this, and a lot of my friends that are in practice metaphysics and whatnot have told me that I'm like a baby manifestor and whatnot. And growing up, my mom always had a saying of, you have the same clothes to get glad in that you get mad in. And, you know, the old saying, if you don't like the situation, change your attitude toward it. We touched on it a little bit last week, but I'm looking for some help with exercises, like when the house is crashing around you and the things happening around you that I wouldn't want to say you're not in control of, but other people are creating actions. What are some good mental exercises? For example, I'm a performer, and I was on stage on the East Coast last week, and the sound guy didn't know what he was doing, and he was messing with the volume and whatnot, and I kept telling myself, have fun and be positive, and don't let him know you're feeling this way and all that. And I knew that I was faking it, and I didn't want to be faking it. And so I was looking for something to really, truly have fun and not just, you know. So I'm looking for mental exercise to not just say, oh, you don't like the attitude. Well, how do you change your attitude?
Yes. Well, you always start out faking it till you make it.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you change is you never have an idea in your head that the house is crashing down around you. You see. If you have that mental thing going on, the house is crashing down around you, what do you think is going to happen?
The
house is going to start to fall.
Yeah.
And with the situation with the young man, because of your expectations and you wanted it to be different, that's where the tension comes in and so forth. And then it's not the thing. If you wouldn't have had any expectations and say, this is going to work out just perfectly and I'm going to put this into my act, I'm going to do something clever with this, this doesn't bother me at all, it would have turned a different way. You see.
That's what I was looking for.
Yes. Because we look at the situation, you see, and you say, well, that's the situation. I told this before, Robert Bitzer. I do not make the best of things. I make things the best. And you are making the best of things instead of making things the best. Can you see that now?
Absolutely. And sometimes I notice that it bleeds over. Those kind of things happen, bleeds over into when I'm not there, when I'm in real life.
Yes.
I'm just doing things like, this guy won't move, you know. And I say, oh, who cares? You know, I always tell myself that, but I notice in the back of my mind it's sitting there bugging me, and I just try to rise above it, but it's still there.
Yes. So. Next time somebody won't move, say to yourself, God, move. Has to move.
And that could go for anything, pretty much.
Yeah, oh, yes, it certainly does.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Try to remember that little thing with Dr. Bitzer. I do not make the best of things. I make things the best. The world tells you to make the best of things, to tolerate things, to put up with things. I'm telling you, that is not what you're here for. You're here to make things the best. You're here to make things the best. But we've heard that because we're taught to tolerate something. Tolerating something does not mean that you love it. It means you tolerate it. Blacks were tolerated for the longest time. Don't tolerate things. Change them. Make them the best.
That's a little slippery, because if you accept something,
I'll come back, Carol.
If you accept something, you're becoming. Let's see. Well, no. If you accept something to be harmonious with it in a positive, that, oh, this is how things are, and you change your mom telling you you're happy or sad in the same clothes, that I'm not going to be bothered by this. I accept it. I'm blessing this. Let's say something irritates you. I'm blessing it. I'm not going to let it irritate me. But then when you're saying make it the best,
make it the best,
then I want to go and make that irritant stop. I want to control it.
Oh. Did anyone hear me say control something?
No. But that's
Carol
what
loves
I'm
relating.
That's what I'm relating.
Don't jump. Let's see if we can get the fine-tune this. First of all, you're not controlling anything. Here's what it boils down to, once again. You live in a mental world. What do you want to think? You're the one that's thinking, is this irritating me? Is this doing this? Is this doing that to me? Change your mind about it. And it has to change. You see, regardless, and 100,000 people can tell you that it irritates them. And you say, see, it irritated them too, so of course it irritates me. Who cares? How do you want to feel? It's always going to be, think of yourself as one. That's what you are anyway. There's only one. Not two, there's only one. So what do I want to feel at the present moment? How do I want to approach this situation? How do I want to make this situation better? By changing my thinking about it, by changing my perspective about it, by changing my beliefs about it, my viewpoints. Remember, don't have a viewpoint, have many points to view. And then pick the one that you want. But we jump on the bandwagon because people will say you have an absolute right to feel that way. You have no rights. Give up that idea you have any rights. The only rights you have are the rights that you come up with in your mind. See, the world wants to tell you you have this right and that right because they have things out there called laws. And you're right and he's wrong. But you have no rights. The only right you have is to think the thought that you want to think. Life is a choice, not a right. Make sense? Does it help you any?
Well,
no, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
I know it doesn't.
I'm almost with it, but it just flies away.
You have to decide if you want to be with it or you don't want to be with it. You know, you have that little thing in your mind, Carol, and you're very proud of that little thing in your mind because it's been there for years. And it's very analytical. But it's not getting you what you want. You have to give it up. And you have to decide, oh yeah, I want to believe that. Oh yeah, that makes better sense. I feel better this way. Instead of letting your mind say, oh yeah, now wait, there could be a little ringer in here. There could be a loophole in here. You're always looking for the loophole. Stop looking for the loophole. Okay?
Okay.
And love yourself. Question?
Fallas. Race Mind says the economy is bad. What's an example of how someone would make the best of things, and then how somebody would make things the best?
Well, how would somebody make things the best right now? Because yes, every time you turn on the television, you read the news, and it's always telling you it's getting worse, or this is going on, or that's going on. Well, how is it affecting your life personally? Are you buying into that, you say? Don't buy into that. Know that you live in an abundant and a prosperous universe, that the economy has nothing to do with you, that money is always freely circulating in your life, you always have a divine surplus, and money is never the issue. Then, remember a couple of weeks ago I said this is a wonderful time for you to become creative. How am I going to create more money, and how am I going to be creative enough not to be spending money? How can I do something different? Now, one of the ideas I came up with, I'm not going to buy cards anymore. I'm going to make my own. You see, I went to the store, bought 6 cards. It was $15 and some odd cents. Now, I said to myself, I could have used that $15 for something else, so why don't I make my own cards from now on? So think of ways to be creative in this situation. And think of things that you really don't need. That you really don't need. You know, like 7 cups of Starbucks every day or something. Cut it down to 2. But just get excited about the whole thing to change your life and to change your spending habits. And this is a wonderful time to every day say, I'm going to save something, even if it's a nickel, and put that away. Why is that good for you? Because you can't build a prosperity consciousness if you're not saving. Saving is building a prosperity consciousness. So save a nickel every day so that your mind says, oh, I'm saving. All the money's not going out, because you hear that, oh, all my money's gone. All my money's going out. Everyone can afford to save a nickel. Save a nickel. And you'll see something else happening. You see, that's using your imagination again, and that's getting a ball rolling. So that your mind is not the nickel. It's the idea of saving. You see? Because you're not thinking of saving right now. You're thinking, oh, all my money's going out. I don't have any money. I can't do this. I can't do that. So change that consciousness and get creative. And know that regardless of what goes on around you, your source and your supply is God. It's not the economy. It's not the economy. I passed out a thing on prosperity, a paper, a long time ago. If I can find them, I will bring them back in. I mean, it starts with God is the source and the supply of my goods. You have to start always with that. You say, it's not your job. If you think it's your job, give that idea up. Your job is a channel through which this prosperity is coming to you. People are scared to death to lose a job. I tell people, the greatest joy I've ever gotten in life was to quit a job. I love quitting jobs. Why? Because I know I can find another one. I don't have that problem. Even in this economy, there are jobs out there. There are jobs out there.
It's very interesting because I've done it a little bit backwards, where I will spend freely and take care of others. Manifesting, I know it's always going to come in, and I'm going to have big jobs and things are going to happen. And they do. And then other times, they bite me in the rear. So, you know, it kind of goes both ways with them. Like, I'll sit there and go, well, I probably shouldn't do this, or shouldn't do that, but he needs it more than me, or I can do this, or I'll be fine tomorrow because I'm a performer. And some money comes in huge chunks. And I'll say, well, I believe in myself. I know things are going to be fine. And sure enough, they are. And then other times, it's like, okay, that was a little bit of a big bar tab, or whatever it could be, you know.
So, what do you want to get rid of right now? What weed do you want to pull from your garden?
I believe that I do occasionally sit on my faith and what I'm capable of.
But the weed that you want to pull with, that, yes, you do all this for people, but then it comes back and bites you in the rear.
I'm going to pull the biting in the rear part back.
Oh, absolutely. You can have that. You have to say every time money goes out, it comes back to me, and it comes back to me multiplied, pressed down and running over. And then you have to start seeing that. But you have that mindset right now and that belief. Oh, yes, I can give all this money away because I'm a performer and I can do all this, that, and the other thing. But wait a minute. Now I don't have any. The jobs dried up. This dried up. The money dried up. And I shouldn't have given them that money. If I didn't give them that money, I would have that money and I would be all right.
Yeah, that happens occasionally.
Yes, but we don't even want it happening occasionally.
Right, and it's been, you know, it happens sometimes too quickly and sometimes not.
Yes. But that's because of a belief system that you have. So you have to pull those weeds.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And make it work all the time for you. See, if you can make it work once or twice, you can make it work all the time. But how many times do you hear people do that? Because what is the basic belief that everyone holds in this room? It's too good to be true. There's no one here that doesn't believe that something's too, the money can't keep coming in. I can't keep getting all this. I can't have all this prosperity. Your mind starts to say, oh, this is too good to be true. And then it goes out. So you have to know that it's always, you have that one.
Yeah.
What's the replacement belief?
That I deserve everything. Nothing's too good to be true.
Well, what do you do when you're able to say that, and then that little bad gremlin comes, and then how do you? How do you squish
reach it in there and pull that weed out? That's just one of those weeds in your mind. And if you call it a gremlin, then kill the gremlin. Aren't you bigger than the gremlin? Why do you entertain it? Remember how that thing I said, why? If you had a little puppy dog in your house and it pooped and puddled all over the house, you would throw it out. But yet you allow your little gremlin to poop and puddle all over you and you keep it up. You say, please come back for more. Can you come back next week? I need you. Instead of saying, listen, you're not my friend. You've never been my friend. Now go back to the nothingness from whence you came. You have to talk to yourself constantly. I should make a recording of what I say to myself all day long and play it for you. I have to stop all these thoughts.
Oh, the power of what you're teaching is so compelling and attractive. And at the same time, you'll get upset with me for saying this, but I get scared sometimes, because the more aware I am of how powerful it is, and then I have to acknowledge that bad Carol habit of like tearing me down is equally powerful, and it becomes so scary to me that, oh my gosh, that if I acknowledge how wonderful your teaching is, I also have to know, well, it's what you said, that wonderful story of the father telling the son, it depends on which one you're going to feed.
Well, that's the wolf.
Yes. That and that awareness of,
yeah, well,
gosh, I wanna walk in the sun. I don't wanna be feeding.
So then you must choose that every time. So don't feed that other thing. Don't look at that gremlin. Remember, if there's a garden on this side and a junk heap on that side, it's your choice which one you're going to look at. And we have to keep doing that. It's controlling your thinking. It's learning to think the thoughts that you want to think. So when she has all that good stuff, she also has that other voice going all the time over here. And she thinks this voice is powerful. It's only powerful because you recognize it and give it power.
Oh, if I
don't breathe life into it.
Oh, I mean, I could even, what you're saying is, I can just say, oh, that's a gremlin.
Yes.
Go away.
That's it.
That's all I have to do. I don't have to get scared of the gremlin. It's just saying,
that's it. Don't be afraid of anything. Your mind's always going to be
doing
that.
Oh, isn't that interesting? That little gremlin came.
Yes.
I have to
sweep
them away.
Exactly. What are you doing here again? Didn't I tell you to go?
Don't get scared of it.
No, you don't have to be afraid of it.
Oh.
See? Good for you.
Along those lines, when it talks about writing down all her negativity, sometimes when I do that, I wonder if I'm affirming the negativity.
Doesn't say to write down all your negativity. It says write down the things that you see in there. You don't have to approach it as negative, but you have to look at it and say, ah, here on this column is this going on, and here in this column is this going on. Now, which one do I want? Which one do I want? That's another thing people are always in this teaching. Oh, well, if I have a negative and I affirm that negative, then does that negative get worse? You have to recognize it and then decide not to live in it. You see, the most wonderful thing about this teaching is this. It's the only teaching that does this. If you make a mistake, you do not have to live in it. You merely say, whoops, I made a mistake. Now I'm going to change my thinking. The outside world, most brand name churches, will tell you, you made that mistake, now you must live with it the rest of your life. And how many people do you know that's living with something for the last 30 and 40 years because they made a mistake. You made a mistake because you didn't have the right information. That is all. Then you must immediately forgive yourself and continue. That's what this teaching is all about. If you make a big mess on the floor outside, the world will tell you you have to stay in that mess. Religious science says, oh, I made this big mess. All around me, this big mess. Oh, so what? That's the most marvelous thing about this teaching. You let it go. See, I was raised, the way you make your bed, that's the way you must lie. No one ever told me you could remake the bed in a day. You know, you can remake your bed. That's what this is all about, remaking things. It's remaking you. It's remaking your thinking. So that you can live in peace. So that you can have peace of mind. I've said this 100 times. You think that you want money. You think you want success. You think you want a relationship. You think you want all this stuff. What you all want and what we all want is peace of mind. We want a mind that says, yes, you're a wonderful human being. Yes, you did that correctly. Yes, you're gracious. That's what you want, instead of a mind that's telling you you didn't do that right. See, remember the other week my mind said, you never do anything right, Dallas. Where did that come from? You have to know that. It's a mental world. Choose to think the thoughts that you want to think.
If you're in an environment that is someone else telling you you're stupid, you're not efficient, or whatever. Now, is this teaching, is that you just change your mind and you can stay in the same environment, or you walk over that mess and you leave it?
Or Jerry Solomon, back there.
How do you remember that?
All the people at Priscilla.
How do you remember?
Back there. Because I have a mind.
And you,
and I remember everything.
And it's not, so that's interesting. That's important for me to understand. So it's you, that just nice illustration, profound. You just step over it.
You step out of the situation.
It's not science of mind to say, just change your mind and stay in it. You can transform it.
Yeah. Well, what does that remind you of? Women who let men beat them. Oh, he didn't mean it. He didn't do this, but I'll stay in it. I'll change my mind. I'll do this, and things will get better, and they keep beating you up. Religious science teaches mind. It teaches you to be. It doesn't teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think, how to think better about yourself, and how to get out of these situations. How to get out of these situations. You don't stay in a situation where people are mean and miserable and hateful to you. If you do that, there's something wrong with you. You must like it. Don't do it. And you've been moving out of these situations. So keep moving. And give up that idea that you were told years ago and you absorbed somewhere that you're not quite what you should be, that this isn't quite right, that you're less than, that, you know, don't let people do that to you. And don't do it to yourself. See, if somebody insults you once, you can get offended. But then when you think about it and you get offended again, now it's your fault. Now it's your fault. And how many people rehash, well, they did that to me and I... They did it once. They did it once. Once you think about it, then you're doing it. Then you're doing it to yourself. We always become our own prisoners. We become our own punishers. You see, if your parents said something to you once and now you're repeating that to yourself, something wrong. They did it once. Forgive them. Remember, they'd have done it to anyone. Don't take it personally. They weren't smart people, that's all. And they do those things. Love yourself. Love yourself. Love yourself. Love yourself. You're magnificent. Question? Yes.
Dennis, when you're blocked from something, you're one of something, and then you're blocked, and you treat it, you stamp your feet, you yell, and like, now it's time for me, and it's still not happening. What's the deal with it?
Keep stomping. Keep stomping. You always keep asking until you get what you want. Do you remember in the story in the Bible, the man who wanted a loaf of bread at nighttime, and he went to the door and he knocked, and the man wouldn't come. He kept knocking, the man kept knocking, kept knocking. The man opened up a window and yelled out, "Go away," and he kept knocking, kept knocking. Finally, the man came down, opened the door, and he said, "I want a loaf of bread." He said, get the loaf of bread and go. So think about that. You keep knocking till the door opens. You have to keep knocking. But you do it with this enthusiasm, with this expectation, with this intention, and with clarity. This is exactly what I want, damn it, and I want it now. And if it's wrong, I'll find that out later. That's all.
A lot of where we go wrong is we do that, but there's that little secondary dialogue that says, "Oh, who do you think you are?
Yes.
There, you're going to knock on the door, and they're not going to give you the bread." Yes. And that's that slippery slope where you
love slippery slopes.
You wanna do it right, but there's those gremlins.
Right. Does anyone remember the affirmation that you always use? No, you don't, so I will tell you. I believe, but help me with my unbelief.
Mm.
I believe, but help me with my unbelief. Everyone has a little unbelief in them, a little doubt in them. If you were 100%, you would ascend this plane. So you're always going to have that. That's what you work on. Remember, all miracles are instantaneous at the moment of belief. What we are always trying to do is build our belief to the point that we can manifest something. We're building our belief. So what you have to build your belief in yourself. I'm worthy, deserving, totally lovable, I'm not, I matter. You keep doing that and doing it. That's building your belief. You have to build your belief. But you're going to have that little bit, so that's the affirmation that you do. I have to do that all the time, I believe, that helped me with my unbelief.
Yes, I'm really working on following my intuition. I've got, you know, really bringing that spirit into the forefront for me. Sometimes I get a little confused. Is my mind telling me it, or is it this telling me it? How do you really step into it?
Well, the gut feeling is a feeling.
Yeah, I get something that I get this feeling that I know that this is
yes.
going to happen.
All right.
I mean, is my mind telling me that because I really want that, or is that feeling
no.
that I feel?
It's a knowing that you know that you know. That comes from here.
Say that again.
Knowing that you know that you know. You have to know that you know that you know. You see, that's why... Pardon?
Is that intuition?
Yes.
And if it's not coming, then it's just
right.
because you've got to keep
yes.
out of it.
And you have to keep knowing.
And keep believing it.
And that's what most people fail, because they don't know that they know that they know. You have to constantly say, I know that's right, I know that's right, I know that's right, I know there's a God, I know this manifests, I know. Not I hope, or maybe. You have to know. I know that this will work. Jesus didn't lay hands on people to heal them and say, oh, geez, I hope this works. He said, I know this will work. You see? We have time for one more. Ah!
I was thinking about what you said. It reminded me of, I'm not sure if it's Course in Miracles or my own one, and she says,
one and the same, you know.
Well, I'm not sure. But she said our fear is that we're not, that we don't have enough power. Our real fear is that we're more powerful than we can imagine.
Yes.
And I think that's true. And what you were saying, I think we're taught to believe that there's good and evil, and there's light and darkness, and there's balance.
Yes.
But what we're saying is that there's so much light, and there's so much love, and everything is love. But I think that we, maybe it's just me, I can't deal with that much love. You know, so I want it, and I ask for it, and I believe it's there, but I can't deal with it. So I realize that's a block, and you're probably going to say, just get over it.
Well, I would say just get over it. But why don't you just let a little in at a time? Don't say, I have a block. Say, this love is seeping into me now. Use that word, seeping. And then you can see it. It'll just seep into you.
So the other thing I wanted, I've been meaning to ask you, and you said it earlier tonight, you said it before, and I don't know how to say it. You said, lack of money is not the problem. The problem is, I can't remember
what it is. Well, what I always say is money is never the issue.
Yes. But what is the issue?
Well, the issue is always something that you're thinking. Money is never an issue. It's what you're thinking about money that's the issue. And if you're thinking the economy is poor, how do you think you're going to get money? See, money is not the issue, people. It's a mental world we live in, a mental world we live in, a mental world we live in. You make good money, still. You, the stand-up.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
and
you see...
One of the things that a former friend of mine said was I said something about that, the economy being bad, and he says... not affecting me, I'm doing just fine.
Yes.
And I said, they're paying me, and they're paying our friend that guy, and they're paying you. And,
yes.
You know.
So that's what you want to look at. You see, you want to always put your attention and your focus on the people that are working, the businesses that are doing, not the ones that aren't. But it's got to be, the reason why we say, money is never the issue, because it's what you're thinking. You know, for you, I'm not very good with money, people. I might as well admit it. I very seldom think about it. And then when I do, I think, oh, well, it just sort of bores me. But you know, once I was going to open up a restaurant, and I had no money to open up the restaurant, somebody never dawned on me that you needed money. I opened up the restaurant. I opened up the restaurant, and I got the restaurant. And the reason why that restaurant made out so well is because it was a foreclosure from the bank, and the bank paid all the utilities. Can you imagine? They paid all the gas. It was in Atlanta, Georgia, in the summertime. I ran the air conditioning morning, noon, and night. They paid all those bills. But I had no money to start that. But I started it anyway. I've often gone for apartments, and I forget that you have to have all these frightful deposits. And I get the apartment anyway. Because money is never the issue. It's what you're thinking. I wanted that restaurant. I wanted that apartment. So why would I let money keep me from what I wanted? See, money has no power. It has no power, it has no life. Does that make sense? Just remember, it's a mental world. What am I thinking about money? What am I thinking about myself? Am I holding myself in the highest of esteem? You see? It's very important to realize that you are a king or a queen. And that, how are you going to manage your kingdom? How are you going to manage your kingdom? You have to realize that. Help you? You lose your thinking. Are there any other questions? I don't want anyone leaving here confused.
Just the easy one. Yes. On the Christmas CD, the Conversations with God.
Yes.
It says a lot, I am that I am.
Yes.
Is that just, I am my thoughts?
Yes. I am what I am, absolutely. Yes. Is that it? All right then. Hold yourself in the highest esteem. And it's wonderful. And so are you, and so am I, and therein's the lesson. Thank you.